Welcome to the latest edition of The B Word, the show where we seek to demystify and discuss the power of B2B branding, what it is, how it works, how it helps businesses get to the success that, in my mind, they deserve. Delighted to have with us today Stephen Millard, Operating Partner and Chief Platform Officer at Notion Capital, to give him his official title. But I'd like to add all-round passionate enthusiast, advocate, and supporter of entrepreneurial SaaS tech founders. Stephen is a master at connecting people and knowledge that enables SaaS tech leaders to solve the problems that matter to them and their businesses and make the growth difference. He loves the venture journey and especially working with those entrepreneurs who believe in the possibility of achieving the highly improbable, which is a phrase I absolutely love and have always loved in your bio. So Stephen, thank you and welcome. And thank you for spending time in your schedule. I know you're really busy, so I appreciate it.
No, it's my pleasure, Jesse. Anything for you.
Thank you. So to start with, would you be able to fill us in a little bit? We're going to talk a lot about the brands that we've all worked with and how we bring that platform activity to them.
Yes.
But could you just frame a little bit about your own entrepreneurial journey and the path from you know, Message Labs, Notion, and that kind of moment of the founding of that too? Because that's entrepreneurial as well.
Well, I started in, you know, by accidentally working in kind of an enterprise software company back in 1989.
How's that?
And, you know, it was totally just a random selection. And I found the whole space very fascinating. And I was initially in sales for a few years. I set up my first startup. I was probably 26, 27, which was a technology company selling software solutions into the NHS, flashed and burned over about a three-year period. Loved the experience. Went to work for a startup. Flash was good. Then I went to Oracle as a sales rep. Moved from there into a product marketing role, and then moved from there into a marketing leadership role, and ended up running marketing for Oracle. Oracle's direct business, which is a telesales business based out of Dublin. Mm-hmm. And we did that for 7-8 years. And then I was approached to go and join Message Labs, which was a brand I'd never heard of. And great experience. You know, when I think back on it, I didn't really appreciate just how extraordinary it was at the time. You know, because I get sucked in and it's just like, this is normal. This is how companies, you know, it was mad. It was growing so fast. And I ran European marketing and then global marketing there for about 3 years in the middle of what I'd call the build phase. It's the kind of transition from the utterly chaotic start phase to the get really big scale phase, which you call the scale phase. It's like building the repeatability, figuring out who your best customers are, etc. So I did that, and obviously Message Labs exited to create was a 700 million exit to Symantec. It's crazy, like Jess, if you think about it.
Yeah,
founded in 2000 and it grew to over 150 million in recurring revenue in 8 years. I mean, that's still bonkers.
It's so impressive.
It's so impressive.
You talk about build and scale, but that's like, I know somebody coined hypergrowth, right? But there's like hyperscale. That's like, that's like holding onto a rocket, right?
But it didn't seem unusual. It just seemed like that's what, you know, happened. And then the Notion team set up their first fund to basically say, look, there's going to be a big shift of software to the cloud. There's going to be a huge shift in terms of moving from perpetual license to subscription. We're the only people that have done this in Europe. I mean, it was the second biggest SaaS company in the world when it was acquired by Symantec. Nuts is that, 2008. I did a couple of other entrepreneurial operational roles, and I founded a small business doing go-to-market strategy. And then I joined Notion beginning of 2016 to build out the platform function and also to lead on the kind of marketing and brand activities as well.
So obviously, there was like massive clarity with the founding fathers, the founding friends around Notion about what they were going to do. But was it quite hard to explain that to people? Because there's stories about Salesforce talking about the cloud and no one quite understanding what they were talking about. Was that notion that you had of the SaaS tech cloud-based platform, was it easy to find opportunities, or was it quite a struggle in the early days?
I think it's changed a lot. You know, I think this precedes me. They did an amazing job of articulating that there is going to be a huge change shift of software spend to the cloud, and there's going to be a huge shift from perpetual licenses to subscription. Right. That's the premise on which they raise their fund two, fund three, fund four, fund five, and then, you know, set out a proposition which initially was, look, we're the only people who've done this kind of work in Europe, to being now a brand that is predicated on like deep domain SaaS expertise, an amazing portfolio, a team of enthusiasts, entrepreneurs and operators, and a kind of value-add ethos. You know, the types of founders we've invested in has changed over the years. The types of companies we've invested in has changed a lot over the years. Mm. But that core essence, I think, is still the same.
Mm.
Still the same. So those three things are still absolutely critical to the brand.
So what was that? Was there real clarity about what kind of brand they wanted Notion to be? Where you sort of, did you have half a shoulder looking at, like in your role as like looking after the brand for Notion, were you like half a shoulder looking over at the American kind of early starters, you know, Don Valentine's and the Sequoias? And
honestly, were you like doing your own thing? You see, I think that the reality is every VC has to have a point of difference, right? We're just selling money. It's a commodity. So you've got to imbue that money with value, and that value has to come from within. Like, this is where you're going to choose us, and this is what you're going to get.
Yeah.
So I've never been overly concerned about what other VCs are doing.
Yeah.
You know, because what we do is unique to us.
I think that strength of character to be clear about who you are, not distracted by the flashing lights down that runway, that pathway that you've chosen. And when somebody seduces you left, you go, no, I'm quite clear I'm going that way. You need to be quite a strong character, quite intellectually certain of what you're doing. But there's down that path, in my mind, lies success, Stephen.
Yeah, and the opposite. I mean, what do you want to be, a master of everything? I mean, that's not going to happen. You know, we have these conversations on a regular basis. Oh, XYZ VC does you know, this thing.
Okay, yeah.
That's great, but they don't do this. And this is what we're really good at.
Yeah.
And I think... It's innate. It's kind of like what we are and who we are. It's not, you can't be anything inauthentic.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this is what we're all about.
That also creates huge clarity around that idea of, you know, one of those core brands, going back to your marketing brand position, that creates that kind of clarity around defendable territory. Because if you're super clear about that's great and they're great and they're great, but we're really good at this bit. And that's actually what you need. You should talk to us again. You know, that's actually... When a business is certain of its DNA and it's certain of itself, it can then create all the right bits to help it get to where it needs to, which is the truth. So what are the kind of triggers that you look for in one of the businesses? If there's that kind of two or three businesses that you're interested in, it's a SaaS business, it's in build or it's starting to scale. Are there particular things that you look for around what you might bring to as a platform offer or triggers that you look for that might make it a go as an investment?
Well, those are quite different things, right? So what are we looking for in the first instance is something quite extraordinary. You know, we are looking for that possibility of something highly improbable. You know, we're looking for the potential for, you know, Jesse is just an extraordinary individual. Yeah. He's managed to attract these amazing people to come along with him. He's done this before, maybe not quite in this guise. He really has something very interesting. And we believe that they have the capacity to build something quite exceptional. And so that has to be there. And you have to have those kind of hairs on the back of your neck. I mean, I remember sitting in the room when Matt Weller and Richard Valter came in, you go, I can feel it now. It's like,
I know exactly what you mean.
You know,
whenever those two speak, you just feel, I said it to Richard when we last spoke, every time he speaks about Muse and about what he sees as Muse, and then Matt comes in and talks about what he believes and sees. I said to Richard last time, I had a vision of you ringing the New York Stock Exchange bell. I'm just convinced.
So just for context, so, you know, Richard Valter is the founder of Muse and Matt Weller is the CEO of Muse. We invested at Series A. They had less than 2 million, about 1.5 million in revenue. I think there were about 20 people. They're now close to 200 million in revenue 6 years later. It's been amazing. Yeah. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, I mean, do we look for something that we can help on? Absolutely. Because we want to be clear about why you should choose us, right? So we can really help you at a high level with every single founder. I think one of the things we can offer is to say, look, we can help you within the context of the challenges you're facing right now in the start phase. We can help you to identify the changes that are going to happen and how you're going to need to evolve in the build phase and the scale phase. And we can help you to think about how you need to adapt, how the people on your team need to adapt, how the organization needs to change, how your go-to-market strategy needs to change. I mean, that's to everybody to an extent. But critically, when you're trying to win an investment, you know, you are looking for something where you can, and when we've made the investment, I want to make a quick impact. What's the very first thing that we can address that's going to make a difference to you?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's always about somewhere in the context of people or growth.
Yeah.
It's always one of those two things. Invariably, those two things are entwined. I mean, and of all of them, people is the most important thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's a combination of that, you know, hairs on the back of your neck. Yes, I want to find a way to impact everybody by helping them to understand the journey. And I want to be able to isolate things that we can make a difference on in the short term. But also you do, and I think this is an important kind of consideration, is that we're not investing in people who need our help. They'll build a great business with or without us, but they want our help because they want to be challenged. And that is incredibly important to me. And I think in 99 out of 100, that plays out. One in 100, you go, why did you take our money? I don't get it. I mean, why didn't you just optimize for price and take money from somebody else? You know, because we don't pay as much as everybody else because we wrap all of this in it. So sometimes it doesn't work, but invariably, most people who take our money take it because they want the kind of experience that we offer and the kind of support we offer.
I mean, one of the, just like referencing Richard, because now we've spoken about him, like one of the things that's very clear about him, and he's very clear when you speak to him about him. So if you speak to him about what gets him up in the morning and what drives him as well, and one of the other people that we work with in your portfolio, Andreas, now at Jura, previously Avrios, says something similar, was that Richard's really interested in a constant accumulation of more knowledge and insight that helps me grow as a person. Like he's conscious of that as something that makes him, him. And I think that lends itself really well to all the things that you've just spoken about, which is this idea that you want to make a quick impact, but you also want to make an impact on somebody that's interested in learning something that they can grow in as well. And I think the two things kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah, they really do.
So that kind of instinctive hair on the back of your neck that you get when you meet someone like that, are there certain traits around some of the entrepreneurs that you've worked with, or are they all just complete, it's all a bit of a mixed bag, or are there common traits that run across some of the people that you see particularly succeed in portfolio?
Well, they do tend to be very driven and very open. You know, they know their mind, they want to win, they're hungry, but they're very open-minded to the fact that, yes, I believe this is how it's going to work, but I'm open-minded to things changing. And I think that kind of strong convictions loosely held is really important. You know, I'm quite intrigued by the fact that there is an element of, mission is not the right word, but this kind of cut me through the middle. I want the world to work in a different way. I mean, I think going back to Richard and Matt or Andreas or others, they deep in their kind of, in their soul and their psyche is, they want to do this because it needs to be done. So I think there's that kind of element. Typically then, and this is more kind of looking at it from a slightly more intellectual perspective, they tend to be very good at other things as well.
Mm-hmm.
They aren't just a one trick pony. They're and often they're very, very, they're exceptional in multiple cases. And I think that word exceptional is important. They are at the far end of a spectrum before.
Well, when you hear Richard speak, I imagine that kind of, it's impossible now because there's too much knowledge, but that ancient idea of being a polymath, of knowing everything that you could possibly know. He's definitely, were we in medieval Genova in Italy, he'd be a polymath. You know, he's got that.
Yeah, exactly.
So when you're constructing the platform program and nurturing it, building it up in the context of Notion, how do you think about where and what kind of services or opportunities to add to it? Because there are so many things that you do. Are they driven by the need of the entrepreneur that you've met, or do you keep your eyes wide open into the landscape of what's changing around you? Like, how do you add things into that program?
Yeah, it's a good question. Well, first and foremost, we're quite structured and organized in terms of how we start with a company, and that is, you know, we are looking for that quick impact and we're looking for, independent of the board member, so one of my, you know, partners who's sitting on the board and working with the company is to say, hey, what are the things that we've already identified that really need to be worked on? What are the things that need to be true for you to achieve certain goals? What are the capabilities you need to build? Who are the people you need to hire? And if you project yourself forward 18 months, 2 years, and you're way off target, why? What went wrong? You know, what didn't you do? What did you do? And so then what you're trying to distill is, right, okay, here's a kind of an action plan. And we start working on that kind of fairly deliberately. And then that plan falls away, but I can still go back to it and say, hey, we talked about this like 6 months ago. We still haven't done it. But actually now this is what really matters. But to answer your question in terms of how do you adapt, because we do that with every single company, and every company is different, though they have a huge amount in common, you're constantly learning and being challenged. So it becomes a fairly organic process. But then what we also are constantly trying to do is to almost put ourselves out of a job and say, okay, those things we used to do, that doesn't really matter anymore, right? These are the things that matter. And partly that's because actually I kind of enjoy that. And partly it's because, you know, the VC platform community has become very crowded and lots of people do lots of stuff. So I want us to be distinctive and distinctively valuable. And so that's why we now try and work within this kind of step function framework of start, build, scale that says, these are the things that the principles that underpin success.
Yeah.
And these are the mistakes. These are the things you really got to try and avoid because everybody does them. They get sucked into.
Yeah.
As you transition from 1 to 3 million and then get through the 3 million to 10 million, it's going to change. And the things that made you successful at 1 to 3 are going to directly lead to your failure.
Yeah.
And they go, what do you mean? The way you operate as a startup, a crazy startup, will not scale, right? Yeah. You know that's the case. Okay, fine. So we tried to become more kind of a little bit more forward thinking as opposed to kind of like purely operating in the here and now. And partly because actually it's quite intellectually stimulating to do. So it's a combination of the constant learning on the job, seeing the common patterns and the repetitions. I mean, look, put it in context, right, Jesse? Like we've invested in more than 100 companies.
Mm-hmm.
And every single instance, we believe in the possibility of them hitting 100 million in revenue within a 8 to 10 year period.
Yeah.
And of that 100, a handful have done it.
Yes.
And a handful still will, and the vast majority will not. And so you learn from that as well. And say, okay, that's really interesting. Why? It's all the same reasons.
Yeah. It's like you've got your fingers on the kind of the pulse of like 100 companies, and you can see exactly where the little pressure points are and why one has gone like that and one has maybe not gone quite as far. And that having that ability to absorb all that insight must be so exciting, Stephen.
It is. And also what we do has very little impact on the trajectory of a company, right? Mm. We can have small moments where we make a difference. Like, you know, the CEO of a company would tell, hey, I could really do with some help on why. Now, we paid it forward in the first couple of years when we can make a difference. But when they've got like a 500 people, you know, our ability to make a difference is minimal. But we get to see and go, oh, right, that's really interesting.
Mm.
Ah, okay, yeah, right. I log that away. Mm. And so you're constantly kind of learning in that way and, you know, just trying to keep perspective in terms of what's working and what's not.
Well, I think that kind of constant learning and that constant acquiring of knowledge. So you understand the framework of how something works at its most basic, right? So the basic principles are in place. So for example, like us doing branding, we know that the brand at get started, startup, the brand at growth, and the brand at scale is different. And there are triggers when you should look at it. And it's probably the same when you talk to somebody about pricing policies, like it's different at start, it gets more complicated, you've got about enterprise, you know, they're the basics. But then there's this whole layer on top of like really unexpected, exciting, interesting things that just arrives. And that must be really exciting, Steve. I think that's
yeah,
the
and
really
bad stuff
bit.
Too, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, when you've got 100 companies in a portfolio, you know, there's pretty awful stuff going on every day, every week. Mm.
Do they lean into your program when bad stuff's going on to try and solve it?
Yes. Yeah, they do. They certainly, I mean, I'm not talking cataclysmic bad necessarily. Yeah. But look, when the pandemic hit, I've never been as busy in my entire life.
Yep.
And it was a buzz. And we had an NPS of 100 at the end of the year.
I bet you did. Yeah.
It was just like
and the most relied on, lent into service on the planet.
Just soaked it all up. It was great.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. Actually, that moment, anyone that had that kind of guidance was super leaned on. So I'm not surprised at all.
So
are there, if you were giving advice to somebody to think about, like, looking at brand in a bigger context, so not just visual verbal expression, positioning, category, but also how brand cascades into kind of go to market, enabling product led growth, thinking about things like that. Are there certain moments in that step approach that you have where you think it's probably a better time for them to engage with it? Or is there no kind of one size fits all in your mind, Steve?
Well, I think you do start from the fundamental essence, similarly what I was saying before, which is like, this is true about us, right? This is true about the kind of the journey we're on and the mission we're setting out to do and delivering on that promise at the very beginning. And then as that, for some companies, that will change quite dramatically because actually the product and the proposition will change. But it's interesting that even when it has, the vision that the founder espouses when they're hitting 100 million is invariably very, very similar. It's not identical to what they were talking about when they had about 1 million in revenue. Mm. I think what you do see increasingly important as you hit 3 to 10 million in revenue is consistency in terms of messaging, you know, real clarity around, you know, the language everybody uses. And then as you get 10 to 30 million, you know, really working harder and harder on alignment around, you know, not just like the internal messaging and the propositions, but who do the customers we choose to serve and being really very, very clear about that. As you then start to kind of move out of the 30 million, then I think brand increasingly becomes incredibly important. Storytelling becomes incredibly important. You're going to be operating in multiple channels, in multiple markets, and through multiple levels of organizations, through multiple partners. So investing in brand at that point, in so much as one might think of it as an externally facing exercise, I think is critical. At the early stage, you know, I think about it like when somebody says, you know, we're going to spend a whole load of money on PR at an early stage. And you go, that's fine. As long as the people you want to sell to or the people you want to move read that PR, that press release. Otherwise, just don't bother.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So it is staged in that kind of way, though it doesn't, it's not, none of this is kind of, like, you know, set in stone. But I think about it in that way, kind of, you know, clarity of message, alignment, and then bigger investment.
I think what we've seen echoes that, like certainly startup with a very small S. It's like, we know we've got this great idea. We've got loads of passion and enthusiasm. We don't quite know how to say it in a way that anyone can understand what we're saying. And then we definitely get called back into the room when they hit those numbers you've mentioned and the alignment's all over the place. Like every person's saying something different in every call. And that's a kind of massive headache. Because then it's like, how can you replicate that sale process efficiently if no one has clarity of what you're about? And if the brand isn't aligned to what any of those messages, then, you know, that shadow boxing that you do when the brand is working hard, when your best salesperson's not in the room and the brand is working for you because they're self-serving, no one understands anything. That's a terrible place to be. And then as we get further up that curve, we've noticed the uncoupling of a certain piece of narrative, which is, how do we start to create a story, to your storytelling point, super well made, Stephen. How do we start to create a story that is light and digestible by somebody that might take us to an IPO or to a float? And you sort of have this really robust, like deep, like imagine going down to Dorset and finding prehistoric, you know, stalagmites and whatever they're called, right? Like you can see all that strata is in place, but you sort of need something really fluffy at the top that might be that narrative that gets you the next thing. And we've definitely noticed that as well, which I found really interesting in the last like year.
I think that's really powerful. It's something I would say to founders if they ask about, well, you know, what is it when you're pitching for investment? It's kind of similar. So like, actually, what do you want the people in the room to, when they're talking about you afterwards, to say? And what words do you want them to use when they're pitching to the other partner who wasn't in the room when you were
exactly
saying, I want them to say these three things, right? Well, you better make sure that they hear those three things as opposed to like all the noise that gets in the way.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. I think increasingly deciding what kind of presence you have as a brand, how much or as little, because very little can be really good too, or a lot can be also good, depends who you are. Because people are going to check you out before they see you. And afterwards, they're going to make up a story about what they remembered. And you should be very clear what you say. Yeah, otherwise, you're in real trouble. I think sometimes, certainly in my experience, you learn a lot from the errors and the mistakes. I don't like the word mistakes because I think picking yourself up and dusting yourself up and what you learned is more valuable than the tripping over. But are there things that you've learned or would have done differently over things that you've done in your time in Notion and the stuff that you've done?
From me personally or for the companies we've invested in or at Notion or over the previous 1,000 years that I've been doing this?
I'd say for you personally over the previous 1,000 years because 1989, I'd met you in 1989. That would have been so much fun to be part of that journey.
I was looking through a fringe back in those days, but not as good as yours, but not far off. Yeah, bad people decisions.
Yeah.
I mean, every single kind of bad decision I've made, I'd say predominantly about making bad decisions about the people I choose to bring on the bus with me, you know?
Yeah, okay.
Failing to understand and really appreciate what it means to hire an A player and why you've got to work so hard to make that happen. And I think secondly, and this is partly why I am like I am now, I didn't adapt. When I was at Message Labs, you know, I really thought I had it nailed, right? I knew what I was doing. But actually the business grew so fast and I didn't.
It's hard to do that though. It's really hard. Like when you're in it, some people can be in it and can see a little bit where it's going. There's that phrase people use, like work on the business, not in the business, right? But you're doing a job and you're really good at it and you quite enjoy it. You get a kick from it, the adrenaline rush and all those things. And the business starts changing around you and you need to see where those wrongs are, but it's not easy to look up.
But that goes right back to what I said at the beginning. This is the single biggest thing I think we can help founders and executives to do is to help them to understand when and how they need to adapt.
Yeah.
Adaptation of a founder and the ability of people, which may not be possible. In my case, it wasn't. And I was a senior member of the team and I was, you know, leveled up to somebody who was really good at the next stage. And that was absolutely the right thing to do, as painful and disappointing as it was for me. And so that ability to adapt, I think, is critical. So that probably my single. Now, I think the people thing is still bigger because I know if I can think of some specific problems, but the failure to adapt was probably the other.
But you're surrounded with some people now at that senior level at Notion that are very open-minded and quite, I was thinking about your colleague, Chris, they have quite an amazing way of jumping across topics and subjects in a kind of lattice-like way that must be quite invigorating in terms of seeing that adaptability and seeing the art of possible. I guess
invigorating and annoying at sometimes as well.
Yeah, can you keep that idea to yourself
for a moment? You have to have your Chris Topman filter on. Which says, yes, that. Okay, that.
Yeah. I'll leave it. But there are yeses.
It is good. And I think it's also, it's a really high permission environment.
Yeah.
With zero patience. But loads of forgiveness because you can't operate in a fast moving organization with high permission if you can't make mistakes. And so that's been a real joy.
And I guess if you were going to give final question, if you were going to give a piece of advice to your younger self, would it be around what you've just talked about? Like that permission to make mistakes, be adaptable, be flexible, be open-minded, enjoy yourself a bit more. Is that the kind of thing you'd think about if you were going to give advice to the 1989?
I never had a problem kind of like putting myself out there to make mistakes. And, you know, I think there is one thing I would say about that is I don't make the mistakes everybody makes.
Yeah.
In the startup world, there is very, very common and consistent mistakes that everybody makes.
Yeah.
And you know, on a human level, we know the things that are bad for us, right? But they're hard to avoid.
Yeah.
We know that, you know, avoiding this bad habit will make our life better, but it's still very hard to avoid. It's the same thing in startups when you say we're not growing fast enough. Let's hire a bunch of new salespeople. No, that's the single worst thing to do, because you've just killed your runway. We haven't quite figured out product market fit, but I've hired this CRO and they're going to fix it for you. No, they will not fix it for you.
Wrong person, wrong skill set.
The wrong person at the wrong time. So those mistakes, that just drives me potty. Yeah, I think it's, don't be too clever. Learn to adapt. Never stand still.
Yes.
You know, constantly figure out exactly what matters most to this business that you're in.
Yeah.
And work on that, right? Within the context of your function. What matters most to this business? In VC, it's winning deals, right? It's the single most important thing.
Yeah.
In a software company, it's building software or selling software. If you are not doing one of those two things, then really think very hard. So clarity in terms of what matters in a company, focusing on that, evidencing it in a way, and constantly improving and not standing still.
Yeah, completely agree. Thank you for joining me today, Stephen. That was amazing. I could talk all afternoon, but I know you have a hard stop. So thank you for joining me. It's always a huge pleasure to speak and catch up with you. We stand on the sidelines and see the success you've achieved as a company. And on the inside, with some of the firms like Muse that we've discussed, we remain super impressed by what Notion is doing. And on a personal level, it's always great to have a chance to speak to you and stay in touch. So great to speak. And thank you for joining us, Stephen. I had a huge pleasure. I could talk all afternoon, but it was a huge pleasure talking to you.
Well, you're a good host. So thank you. It's
been Thank you very much, Stephen.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to join us next time on The B Word.